Pod Moth. Welcome to Bad Axe Podcast. I'm your host, Danielle Blinka.
And I'm your co-host, Aaron.
Bad Axe is brought to you by the Pod Moth Media Network. Check out Pod Moth for more great podcasts. If you would like to support Bad Axe, we have a Patreon at patreon.com/badaxepod. Memberships start at just $1, and you get access to exclusive bonus content that goes back several months. I already have written this month's bonus episodes, and they are extremely interesting, so I think you will want to listen. You can also leave us a review or refer us to a friend, which is a great free way to support Bad Axe Podcast. Now on today's case. We are doing something super different today. Some of you will know because you'll be watching us on video. We are attempting to record this week's episode for YouTube, and we are going to see how that goes. Now, unfortunately, the case we are doing today does not have a lot of great photos, so we just threw up our logo, and we are just going to see how that looks and see how the case goes. If it's really, really bad, I just won't post it, but I'm hoping it's good. I'm hoping this is going to be a great foray into video format for us. We will try to fix our hair next time. I have not washed my hair. I have curly hair, and I'm just trying to get it to not look like a nest today. For you
her out hair there. Looks beautiful. I know you guys agree.
Thank you. I make him say that. It's part of it. I require it him to say that. So trust me, my hair does not look cute. Anyway, we are going to Santa Rosa, California today for a case that harkens back to a case we have covered in the past. And I think those of you who have been listening for a while will understand what I mean when we get there. Also, I feel like this is probably one of the scariest cases that we've done on this show. Not because the crime is especially grisly. I don't really think I need a trigger warning for this episode just because it's sort of a straightforward murder in the murder part. But what happens leading up to it is something that's so relatable. It makes it feel like this crime could literally happen to any of us. And as our theme this month is Halloween murders, it literally could scare you when you're trying to go do your Halloween parties and trick-or-treating and stuff on October 31st when we get to that. So, warning, I guess. You are going to be scared most likely, I think. Now, Santa Rosa, California in 2012 is where we are going. And Santa Rosa, as it turns out, is absolutely amazing. It has mountains. It has redwoods. It's very close to the ocean. There are 177,000 lucky people that get to live there. And it is in the wine country part of California in Sonoma County. And basically, I believe all these people are happy because Santa Rosa, California is on the list of happiest places to live. I learned that for this episode. And I do have to say that it did suffer from the wildfires recently in 2017, but I still think it looks like a really gorgeous area. So I guess we could vacation there one day post-COVID.
There you go.
We're basically kind of post-COVID.
Yeah.
That's a lie, but we're kind of doing it. We're kind of out there, right? We're all vaccinated, sort of.
That's right.
That's happening. Mm-hmm. So maybe we go there. Who knows? Now, Santa Rosa is where 24-year-old Michaela Wooldridge decided to start her fresh life in 2012. And she was off to a sort of difficult start because, unfortunately, Michaela was starting her new life at rock bottom. She was spending Halloween 2012 like she spent most nights, which was surviving the streets of Santa Rosa. Unfortunately, Michaela was, as we used to call, homeless, or as we might now call unhoused or unsheltered, depending on what terminology that you use. So she was unfortunately having to sleep on the streets. Now, luckily for her, she was very close to getting a bed at the local shelter because she had been on the list to get a bed, and she was very soon going to be staying at a shelter called Sam Jones Hall. So that would have been great if she would have made it there.
Yeah.
I think you kind of figured out that she's not, going to make it there since it's a Halloween murder and we're on Halloween.
Yeah.
But I didn't want to, like, necessarily spoiler it, even though I'm literally spoiling it as we speak. All right, now, Michaela was the mother of a 6-year-old son whom she loved dearly, but unfortunately, she had recently lost custody of him because she had been dealing with some mental health problems that were causing her to use drugs. Her family termed this as emotional problems that she was dealing with. But what it boils down to is that she had a drug dependency that was making it really hard for her to take care of herself and to take care of her son. And so after losing custody, she had gone to Santa Rosa to try to get treatment and get back on her feet so that ideally she could get her son back and she could get her life back and everything could continue as normal. But, I mean, as you could probably guess, getting help for your problems is not super easy, right?
That's right.
So she did encounter some struggles when she got there. It's unclear if she was trying to participate in a program or if she just thought that Santa Rosa would be a nice place to go. Because her hometown, or where she moved from, was Humboldt County, which was like around 4.5 to 5 hours away. So it's not like this would be a short trip to take if you weren't like having shelter or having a car. Yeah. So that is what she had to do, though, to get better.
Yikes. That's a lot to go through, man.
Definitely. Now, on Halloween night, Michaela was mixing with partygoers on this area called 4th Street, which doesn't sound like a very important street, but it's lined with businesses, and it also intersects with a lot of neighborhood streets, and it's very walkable because it has a lot of sidewalks on it. So it was definitely somewhere where people were going to trick-or-treat or to go to parties. And so she's sort of mixing in with these people, but the crowds obviously started to thin out eventually. Like, as we approach midnight, 1 a.m. and 2 a.m., there's not any kids on the street anymore. And a lot of people who have been at parties are either passed out or they're at home. So the streets are kind of emptying. But that doesn't mean that all the parties have stopped. Because on a street nearby, 20-year-old Jesse Zatino was in the throes of a Halloween night to remember. He and his 19-year-old girlfriend, Zoe Kind, had gone to a small house party at an apartment of their friend. At the time, this couple were living together. Zoe and Jesse were living together in a shed in his parents' backyard, which reminded me of 90 Day Fiancé. And this is probably not the time for me to talk about it, and I'm not going to. But I'm just saying that they were the original shed backyard couple.
That's right.
They're not like goals, as we're going to see. No offense to them, but, you know, some offense because of what's going to happen. But they did initiate the shed trend.
They did it before it was cool.
So credit for that, I guess. They had gone to their friend's apartment to go to this house party. Now, the original plan was for them to go to this apartment, and then at some point, they were going to go to a bigger, better house party. That was the plan. But that's not exactly what happened, because at this small house party, Jesse meets up with his friend, whose name is Lincoln Turner, and Lincoln's roommate, whose name is also Zoe, which gets confusing for me, because yeah. There's two Zoes now.
Oh, yeah.
All right, so they meet at this apartment, and Turner, as it turns out, has drugs. He, I believe, might have been dealing these drugs, and I say that because he had, like, LSD and other like really fun exciting drugs that you might do if you like had like who just has those
yeah just has them and, laying around
like I don't know maybe I'm just like not good at drugs. I feel like every time we do an episode that has drugs I'm just like, and there was cocaine there. How much is a lot? We don't know. Is this a lot of cocaine in this case? Maybe it's normal for people to have like 10 LSD hits just at their house. Maybe, like, I'm weird because I don't have LSD at our house.
No, we don't.
Like, I'm just a little loser, I guess. I don't know.
No, you're not.
I'm, like, having a bad influence on the children. LSD is really, really not good if you're a kid. Like, you should not do it.
That's true.
Anyway, also, this episode is going to definitely tell you why you shouldn't, because he's going to make some real bad choices, y'all. So definitely do not emulate him. All right. So they're at this party and Turner is talking to Zatino about all the things they're going to do, about how they're going to drink. They're going to do drugs. Ecstasy is mentioned, as is LSD, Or this drug that I believe it's called 251. It's sort of synthetic LSD is what we're actually talking about. But regardless, it has the same effects as LSD. So they kind of use them interchangeably. So Turner offers this LSD hit to Zatino and puts it on the dresser. And according to Turner, he just leaves the room and is like, hey, man, do whatever you want, whatever, party time. And he leaves Zatino alone with this LSD. Now, later, Zoe Kind, who is Zatino's girlfriend, comes in and cautions him, do not do this LSD. Because in the past, Zatino has done a lot of drugs, including LSD and psychedelic mushrooms. But in her experience as his girlfriend, he has had not great reactions to these drugs. And so she's warning him, like, I know you've had bad trips before. Please do not use these drugs. You are about to ruin Halloween.
Yeah, exactly.
But Zatino's like, no. Like, you can't tell me what to do. You are not my mom. I am an adult man. And I am doing LSD at this Halloween party. And so he does. He's 20 years old. He thinks he knows everything. He does the LSD at the party. Now, immediately, he starts to have a bad trip.
Go figure.
Yeah, totally bad trip. He thinks everyone is a demon. Everyone's evil. Like, I don't know why you would want to simulate a horrible mental illness, which as someone, I have bipolar disorder. We've talked about this on the podcast. I don't know, like, why you would aspire to have a horrible delusion, but this guy is like, bring on these demons until they get here. And then he's like, no, no, I do not want these demons in my life. This is terrible. So he starts completely freaking out.
Of course.
And there are witnesses at the party, obviously including his girlfriend, that all have spoken about this and said that he was absolutely losing his shit and was accusing people of being demons and having this terrible reaction to the acid. So at some point, he decides to go for a walk. And as we're going to see, he goes for a couple of walks, and eventually, most of the group leaves and goes to that bigger house party. But it appears that Zatino did not make it to the bigger house party, based on court documents, because he was out of his freaking mind on this LSD trip. Now, this goes on for hours, until around, like, 1:30-ish. And that's when things start to really come to a head, because at this point Turner is going to a convenience store because he wants to get some food or some drinks or something. And at this point Zatino is still like having this bad trip, which I know there's a word for this. Do you know what the word is for bad trip?
I think it's just a bad trip, isn't it?
Bad trip. We're gonna go with it. So he's on the bad trip and he decides he's gonna go out to the convenience store with his friend Lincoln Turner. And they're going to walk together, and he's going to get this air, and he's breathing. Now, as they're walking down the street, this is where these two worlds collide. Michaela Wooldridge and Jesse Zatino are about to cross paths on the streets of Santa Rosa, 4th Street specifically, on Halloween night 2012. It was just before 2 a.m. on November 1st, 2012, when Michaela and Jesse Zatino officially crossed paths. Now, when Jesse saw Michaela, he did not see a woman walking down the street. In fact, he did not see a woman or a human. In his words, he saw a devil. Yeah, that's his story. He saw a devil. Now, as soon as he saw this quote-unquote devil walking down the street, he thought he needed to do something about it. Because he convinced himself that all he needed to do to get out of his bad trip in this world where everyone was a devil was to kill one of the devils.
Bloody FM presents Hometown Ghost Stories, a paranormal podcast that investigates a new town every week, bringing you all the hauntings from haunted houses to castles, bridges to asylums, wandering spirits to demons. Over 100 episodes covering different towns all over the world. Tune in to Hometown Ghost Stories live on YouTube every Tuesday night at 9 p.m. Eastern or on any podcast platform and find out if your hometown is haunted.
Okay, something is off about that story, though, right? Because, I mean, like, he's been seeing demons and shit all night, and, like, now he needs to do something about it? I mean, what's up with that, right?
Yeah, I definitely agree with you. I'm on board with that. Now, according to Zitino, he actually gave a quote in his police interview later on, and this is what he said verbatim. He described his hallucinations as following, quote, "I would see your horns. I would see blood squirt out of your face. I would feel the blood trickle down your necks. I would taste the iron in on my tongue and trickle down. And then I would start bleeding and it felt like you were sucking the life out of me," unquote.
Jesus, that's pretty gruesome.
Yeah, it is pretty gruesome. And part of me sort of believes that that could happen to you on a trip. And we definitely have done a case in the past where someone who was having a mental illness episode thought that somebody else was a goblin.
Yep.
And felt the need to attack that person.
Yep.
But in this particular instance, it does seem odd that he has no problem being around Lincoln or being around his girlfriend, and he's able to refrain from harming them. But then he sees Michaela and is intent upon harming her just because of this demon hallucination.
Yeah, exactly. Something is off about that story.
Yeah. So what happens is when they pass Michaela, he turns to Lincoln Turner. And Jesse says that he's going back to the house and he's going to just try to rest up after his trip, and encourages Lincoln to go on and go to the convenience store without him. So Jesse turns back, but he doesn't go back to the house, which I figure you probably know by now.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Lincoln does go on. He goes to the store and Jesse essentially starts running back down the sidewalk to go catch Michaela. As he's running, he grabs a pocket knife out of his pocket and opens the blade. And this is like a two-blade knife that he has. And it also has a Batman insignia on it. So we're literally talking about a Batman knife. He has it in his hand. He runs down the street and he stabs Michaela in the back.
Oh.
Yeah. So she screams out, obviously.
Yeah, of course.
And he just keeps stabbing in her back. And as he is doing this, she's calling out for help. And she's saying, I have two quotes from her. She says, "Stop," and she says, "Help me, help."
Yeah, I mean, of course she does. She's trying. I mean, she's getting stabbed. You know, she needs some help, right? Mm-hmm.
But obviously, it's around 2 a.m., so no one comes. No one hears her screaming.
Jesus.
So she is basically going down, and at some point, he's facing her, and he stabs her in the chest as well. And she also has a stab wound on her arm that the medical examiner described as a defensive wound, where she was, like, trying to fight him off.
Good.
So he ends up stabbing her 13 times.
Nice.
And in addition to that, she also had wounds to her mouth from him grasping onto her mouth, trying to cover it up so that she couldn't yell for help anymore. Oh. Like, yeah, she has, like, bruising and, like, damage inside of her mouth from that.
Wow.
Yeah. It's absolutely disgusting.
Yeah, it's a gruesome crime.
Yeah. So that is what happens on the street when they interact. Now, according to Zatino originally, he says that he is trying to kill this demon. Afterwards, remember, he's tripping, right? He's in a fantasy world. He starts heading back to the apartment, but realizes, hey, I've got a bloody knife. So he just sort of chucks it in the river as he's going back.
Huh.
You know, all innocent-like, like you would if you were having a hallucination and not being
trying
a murderer.
Trying to cover up a murder, yeah.
Exactly. So that is the first piece of evidence that he destroys. Yeah. Then he does go back to the house where Zoe is waiting for him.
Something about this whole story just doesn't add up for me, though. I mean, like he's talking about how he's having a hallucination and bad trips and stuff, and like, it would seem like he'd be out of it. But then he's also turning it around and, like, trying to hide evidence and covering things up and, like, trying to keep her from screaming. And, like, if you're having a hallucination and you think you're being attacked by, like, the devil, like, keeping the devil from screaming is not the first thing in my mind. The first thing on my mind is, holy shit, this is the devil, I gotta kill the devil.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? Like, it doesn't matter if the devil is screaming.
Exactly.
Right?
And we've done several other cases where people have had similar situations, and that is usually the reaction they have, is they're not thinking about it. And from a logical standpoint of how you would attack another human, they're thinking about how you would attack, you know, a demon or a goblin or whatever it is.
Right.
Okay, so while he's headed back to the apartment, Michaela slumps down in front of this business that was a lamp and shade shop on 4th Street. And she just sort of bleeds out, partially on the sidewalk and partially on the driveway in front of this shop. And she ends up laying there for hours. And later on, Zatino would actually admit that he came back to the spot to check on her at one point and considered calling 911, but then didn't.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's awful.
Yeah, it's bad.
That's really bad.
Now, we're going to pick up the story with what Zoe ends up later testifying to. She claims that he came back to the apartment and his hands were bloody and he had really severe cuts on his hands. And he told her that he thought he had just killed someone. Now, Zoe is worried that he's having this trip and maybe he hallucinated it and maybe harmed himself somehow. So she goes to look for a body. But she tells police later that he actually pointed her in the wrong direction. So she goes to see if there's anyone like bleeding out or injured or deceased out, you know, in the streets around the party. But since she's going in the wrong direction, she doesn't find anything.
Yeah.
And there's no blood or anything. So she, at first, is like, maybe this is just part of his trip. His delusion is he thinks he killed somebody. So she sort of helps him get washed up. And then they get in the car so that they can go get some bandages from the drugstore.
Yeah.
Guess who drives? His name is Jesse Zatino.
Yeah, the guy who's tripping balls and the murder face.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes. He 100% drives. And according to his girlfriend and other witnesses, he had no problem driving to the drugstore and had no issue even finding the drugstore.
Of course not.
Despite the fact that he was quote-unquote tripping so hard that he thought that Michaela was a demon.
Yeah, give me a break, right?
So they tend to his wounds and they go home and they try to go to bed. The next morning, they wake up and they're trying to get ready for jobs and whatnot when the friends, other Zoe and Lincoln Turner, find out that there's been a murder right down the street from their house.
Yeah, go figure.
Yeah, because Michaela's body was discovered at around 5:20 a.m. There were two joggers actually found her and they called the police.
Yeah. Man, that has to really suck to be going out for your morning jog and, like, find someone like that. I mean, that just has to be a really traumatizing thing.
Exactly. And that is why you don't go jogging in the morning. It's not for other reasons. It's not because I'm lazy. That's not it. It's not part of it. It's not because I'm lazy. It's because you might find dead bodies. I mean, if you go jogging, though, at like 3 p.m., probably no bodies out there. Just going to say that.
Probably not.
Just going to say that.
Probably already discovered.
All right, so they call the police and the police show up and they start investigating this crime. Meanwhile, his friends find out and immediately think, oh my God, I'll bet Jesse killed that girl, right?
Yeah.
Now, what would you do if you thought your friend murdered a girl on the street?
I would call the cops.
That's what I would do too. That's so random. I would totally call the cops on all of you. Please do not tell me about your murders. Like, I guess do, because I want you to go to jail if you kill people.
Yes.
But definitely don't involve me in your murders if you think that's going to be, like, a thing that I'm chill with.
Yeah.
Because I'm not.
No.
But these friends apparently kind of chill with it. I'm not trying to, like, talk bad about you, but, I mean, you should have called the cops.
Yep.
And these are things they said in court documents. So, that's on them.
Yes, it is.
Now, they, instead of calling the police, called Jesse and Zoe and said, hey, alert, there is a dead woman out here. I think that Jesse might be a murderer. And Zoe was like, what? Oh, my God. Jesse, there's a dead body out here. And what do you think she did?
She tried to cover it up.
She helped kind of to try to cover it up. Because instead of calling the police, she talked to him about it. And Jesse said, oh, I better get rid of my clothes from last night.
Yeah.
And yeah. So
an innocent person does.
Yeah, as normal people do.
Yes.
They get rid of their crime scene evidence.
Yep.
So they put the clothes in a bag and they drove it to this apartment complex dumpster next door to them and threw the clothes in the dumpster. and then just went about their day.
Yeah, which is also not a great way to dispose of your murder clothes. I mean, mm-hmm, I'm not a pro with this, but I've watched enough true crime to figure out that the cops are just going to go and like look immediately in that bin, they're going
to
find it.
In this particular case, they don't know to look in the bin, so it kind of works out. It's not like we did a case a while back where the guy being investigated wouldn't let the police in his house, but then he just put all the evidence from the murder in a trash can and just wheeled it out. Like, I'm not trying to say don't get caught, because definitely get caught, but yeah. I mean, like, at least try. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
That one was just like, that was my favorite part of the whole, I still can't get over it.
It was a spectacular case, just for that.
Just the level of, like, preventing the cops from getting in, and just like, yeah, you'll never get in here, ha ha ha. And then just wheeling all of the evidence, all of it, in the trash can to the car. The cops are outside his house. They're watching his house. They're waiting for a warrant. And then they're watching him walk down the driveway with a trash can full of evidence. It's just the most ridiculous.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you have to wonder if they were like, we shouldn't even bother checking, because he's not going to put that shit in there. And then they look, and what do you know? Evidence.
There it is, yep.
It's right there.
Mm-hmm.
In this case, though, they did not know to go check at this particular dumpster, because when police started investigating, they had absolutely zero leads. There was no evidence at the scene that obviously pointed to a suspect. And there was nothing about Michaela that made them think this Halloween party goer might have killed her. They looked into the people who were in the homeless areas that she was in, or the unsheltered areas that she was in, but there were no suspects there. All they really had to go on was what would actually turn out to be an amazing clue, and it was DNA that was underneath her nails, because Michaela fought like hell, and girlfriend had all kinds of DNA underneath her nails from her killer. Plus, if you recall, I told you he did cut his hands, which all of our true crime fans out there will know. A lot of times when people do stabbings, they do cut their hands up, because it's hard to grip the knife as it's getting bloody. And so your hand like slides down over the blade, it gets cut, and now your blood is also at the crime scene.
Yep.
Points to knives for screwing over the murderers.
I know, right?
For that shit, right?
Indeed.
So, in this case, he has a lot of DNA at the crime scene. Unfortunately, it's not magic, and they didn't have anything to match it to yet. But they did catalog this evidence, and even though the case went cold pretty much immediately, and they did not have anybody that had motive or any reason to have opportunity or anything, they did have this DNA for later. So, for about 17 months, this case just sits there cold.
Wow.
Yeah.
17 whole months. That's a long months. Time.
Mm-hmm.
Damn.
It really is. And so it's been cold this whole time. And then finally, they get a break in the case.
Yay.
Yay.
It's said that we die two deaths. The first after we exhale our last breath. And the second, the last time someone speaks our name. I'm Alicia, host of Dead On, a true crime podcast. Together, we'll honor the victims of violent crime, investigate what makes criminals tick, and shed light on long-forgotten cases. Come on this journey with me. Dead On is streaming now, everywhere you love to listen.
All right, so for 17 months, Michaela's murder went totally cold. They had no motives, because they knew it wasn't a robbery and she had not been sexually assaulted, but they did have this DNA. And then finally, in March 2014, Zatino had an oopsie.
An oopsie?
Yeah, he made a mistake. He got pulled in on a random routine drug bust situation.
Nice. And yeah. Then he had to give DNA, right?
He did, because yeah. Mandatory DNA. So they made him give DNA, and they put the DNA in the database, and bada bing, we have a match.
There you
and
go.
That's how they found Michaela's killer.
Nice.
Now, at this point, it gets full, like, SVU level stuff here. We're about to be, like, on a TV show for cops. In a moment. Prepare yourselves. This is like the most interesting, I don't want to call it shenanigans because it was a good investigation, but it feels like a little bit like police shenanigans just because of how creative these cops are. Okay, so they know that his DNA matches the blood and the DNA at Michaela's crime scene. But they don't want to just go arrest him and, like, tip him off that they're onto him and have him close down. So they decide that they are instead going to monitor him and try to get him to incriminate himself more. So they get taps on both Zatino's phone and Zoe Kine's phone. Now, at this point, Zoe and Zatino are broken up. They have ended their relationship, but they are still friends. And so the police are thinking that since Zoe likely knows about this crime because she was with him at the party that night, and their phones show that they were, like, constantly in communication that night, because they did get his phone records. They had subpoenaed those, too. They knew that she probably knew something about the crime. So after they get the phone tap, they decide they need for her to call him, right? Because they need them to talk about it.
Yeah, makes
so
sense.
So the cops literally get a copy of the 2012 newspaper that first reported on Michaela's murder and then wrote on it, "Time to make amends."
Oh, wow.
And then sent it to Zoe. For realsies, that is what they did. God. So Zoe opens this newspaper and freaks out a little bit and decides she needs to call Zatino right away.
Yep.
So she calls him, but they sort of speak in code. Like, they don't really say anything that incriminating. They just reference Halloween, and we need to talk about Halloween, and they make a plan to meet up at a bar. Guess who goes?
The cops.
The cops do. The cops literally go to this meetup and then spy on them. And then once they're ready to leave the bar, they arrest Zatino.
Nice.
The newspaper part, though, just, I am floored.
I know. How creative is that?
I love it. I love it. Like, we're not, like, huge cop fans over here, but points for that. That's fun.
Yeah.
He's a murderer, so. But yeah, I love the newspaper bit. It just feels like a movie.
It does.
I feel like it's a comedy movie. Maybe not SVU, maybe more like Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Yeah.
Like, it's more like, I feel like it's a comedy. I don't know why. It's intense, but it's also just like, that's hilarious.
It is, for real. That's awesome.
I mean, considering that we're in, like, a murder investigation, which is horrible and just awful.
Yeah.
And then to have this little bit with the newspaper is just like comedic relief in a way.
For sure. Yeah.
That's my opinion.
Oh, yeah.
All right. So they bring Zatino in, and at first, he's alluding to the fact that he knows why he's there,
yeah,
right?
Sure.
Because the cops are like, "Hey, you know why you're here?" And he's just like, "I think I do," that kind of stuff, where he's sort of dodging their questions, but alluding to something, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, tantalizing the police. There's a lot of transcript of some of this that you can read online, and that is pretty much how most of the questions read, where the cops will be like, "Do you know Michaela?" And he's, "Not before that night." Like, that's not what he says, but, like, it's similar to that. It's just that kind of talking around it,
yeah,
but being very mysterious.
Yeah.
But you don't do that if you're not, like, a murderer, saying.
Exactly, for sure, yeah.
Now, when the police first brought him in, they noticed that he had some scars from that night that were, like, from those knife wounds. So they got some pictures of that because that's obviously very scandalous. And it matches Zoe's story because she mentioned that he had these knife wounds on his hands. So now we have evidence that she's not lying because his hands are scarred.
Exactly.
They also learned for sure that he was at that Halloween party that was right there. And not only do they have, like, Zoe's story at various points about this, because later on she does admit to a lot of the stuff that happened, but they also have the phone records that pinpoint exactly where both of them were and that they know they were at this Halloween party together.
Yep.
And then they also learn about the bad trip and how he decided to leave the house and be alone right around the time of Michaela's murder. Mm-hmm. So they're, like, narrowing in on him as they're going into this interrogation. Now, his interrogation only lasted for about an hour and 15 minutes, which is not that long, because we've watched some, and also, like, we know of other cases where, like, people gave false confessions and stuff, where these things went on for, like, 9 or 10 hours or a whole day.
Yeah.
But his was, like, only an hour and 15 minutes. It's pretty short.
Yeah, for real.
And during that, he actually did admit to stabbing Michaela with the folding knife. I mean, it took them a while to get him there.
Yeah.
Because at first he was trying to be elusive. "I don't really know her, or you know what happened that night, and things like that.
Yeah.
And eventually he starts giving details. Now, this is when he confirmed to police that he didn't even know that Michaela was a woman. And at one point, he actually said that if he would have known she was a woman, that he wouldn't have attacked her so badly.
What? I don't even know what to say to that. I mean, it's like, oh, if I known she was a woman, I wouldn't have murdered her. I mean...
No, he said he would have murdered her. He just said he wouldn't have... He didn't say he would have murdered her, I should say. He didn't say, yes, I would have. He just said he wouldn't have attacked her so violently.
Oh, God.
He would have gone easier on her had he known she was a woman.
Oh, he would have done a gentle murder.
Apparently so. I don't know why he thinks that's a defense, but that is what he's... That he literally says that. That he would have gone easier on her if he would have known she were a woman.
Wow, that is truly terrible.
Mm-hmm.
Just yeah. Terrible.
Oh, yeah. Now, even though he does admit to killing her, he also... says that it's not his fault.
Oh, of course.
And the reason why it's not his fault is because of the drugs. And he actually, by this point, starts saying that he OD'd on the drugs. And he's just like, oh, I OD'd and I was having such a bad trip. I'm not responsible for anything that I did that night.
Bullshit.
That's his opinion. Bullshit. It's not the opinion of the prosecution team.
Good.
I will tell you that.
That
but
is good, yeah.
It is also the opinion of the defense, though. They just went with this. They're like, no, he didn't do it. He's not responsible. We're gonna try to do insanity. That was their plan. His defense did argue that he wasn't responsible for the murder because he was under the influence of drugs at the time, which means that he can't form intent to commit murder. And so they were really going for manslaughter.
I see, yeah.
That was their plan. But the prosecution disagreed with these claims. Now, their case was built on several facts. First, they pointed out that he decided to take the drugs. So anything that happens after he is under the influence of them was his decision because it was his choice to do the drugs in the first place.
That's right.
Like, it's not like he was given drugs and it was a trap or anything. Like, he literally decided to take the drugs.
Yep.
So you're responsible if you have this bad trip.
That's right.
It's part of it. But they also talked about the other things he did that night. They had Zoe testify about how he drove a car. He didn't have trouble finding things. They also pointed out that he tried to get rid of evidence, including that knife right after the murder.
Yep.
He was around all these other people that he didn't kill or attack.
Yep.
So it doesn't, like, really fit with his version of events. That he's, like, completely out of his mind and not able to make any kind of choices.
Exactly.
And not able to choose not to commit a murder.
Indeed.
So that's basically what the cases are they put on at trial. The jury did disagree with the defense. They ended up going with the prosecution's version of events. And so they convicted him of first-degree murder.
Good.
Which is
good
like, job. Yay!
Yay!
We're always excited when they get convicted over here.
That's
so
right.
He does get convicted of first-degree murder, and he goes on to the sentencing trial. Michaela's family was not actually able to attend the sentencing trial, but they did it virtually, which is kind of fun considering that this was before COVID. So they were, like, really revolutionary at the time.
Yep.
But they did attend the sentencing virtually to talk about how losing Michaela meant a lot to them. They loved her. She was their daughter, sister, maybe. Yeah, she had a little sister, I think. And she was a mother to a son. And now they've lost her. This is a horrible thing that happened to them.
Yeah, it's terrible.
And the stepdad of Michaela spoke a lot about how the son had really suffered a lot. And that he had started to ask questions. Because remember, he was six. And so that first Christmas without his mom, he was like, where's mom?
Yeah, for real.
And he was really hurt because, obviously...
His mom's
and
gone,
yeah, exactly. And, like, I think that they had kind of a honeymoon period where he didn't ask a lot of questions about it. But as he was getting older and as he was, like, missing her more, he started to ask questions. And they basically said that this was a nightmare that he had to live with now for the rest of his life because his mother was taken from him like this, especially also the fact that it was on a holiday. That is just, like, a painful experience that none of them are ever going to get over.
Yeah, of course.
And it's just, it's really sad for this family, especially considering the fact that I think that people like Zatino think that just because someone is sleeping on the streets that they don't have people that love them. And they do. I mean, it shouldn't matter even if you don't. Even if you didn't have a family, you're still valuable and you still deserve your life and to feel happy and to, like, be safe. But just because someone's sleeping on the streets, you don't know their story. And that doesn't mean that they don't have a family that loves them. Fortunately, the judge agreed with this and decided that they thought that this was just a horrific crime. But the mandatory sentence for first-degree murder in California at this time was 25 years. So he got 25 years as a mandatory sentence. But the judge also tacked on an extra year for using the knife to kill her.
There you go.
So he has 26 years in prison. And that was a sentence that was handed out in January 2016. So not quite 4 years after the murder. Closer to like maybe 3 years and a few months after the murder when he went to jail. All right, so Zatino did appeal his 26-year sentence for murder and for using a knife to kill Michaela. And his grounds for appeal are interesting because his first thing that he says is that the cops, whenever they were interrogating him, were like coercing his confession by promising him that they would be lenient with him and also by threatening him. Now, the threats that he speaks to were actually threats for them to prosecute Zoe for her role in the murder. Because even though she did not kill Michaela or harm Michaela, she did help him dispose of evidence, and she knew about the crime and did not tell anyone.
Yep.
And so, yes, they did. The cops openly admit they did threaten to prosecute Michaela because she had committed a crime.
Yep.
And so they said they were going to do that. Essentially. Yeah,
which
and,
makes sense.
Yeah, and then they did say that they would be, that he would get more leniency if he confessed to the crime, because the alternatives are that they're going to go after the maximums of everything, and so he has a chance at getting leniency if he confesses. So the judge in the appeals case decided that that was not a violation, that does not count as a coercion, and they had a recording of this, and you can tell that it's just like question and answer. The other thing that he appeals on is he says that the way that the judge instructed the jury about intoxication and how intoxication affects your decisions was wrong and was like kind of prejudicial because he should have gotten more leniency from the jury because he was intoxicated. But the appeals court found that that was not accurate and they denied both of the appeals.
Good.
Which kind of makes sense because I feel like if you could do anything you wanted while intoxicated, then nobody would ever get in trouble for any crimes.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, because it's like when you're drunk driving and you run over someone, you still did it.
Yep.
Like no one's like, oh, well, he was intoxicated. He couldn't make any decisions. That's not how that works, really. Like you got intoxicated. That part was your fault.
Exactly.
That was your oopsie.
Yes, it was.
As it turns out. So that is what they decided in that case. Now, Michaela's memory will go on forever. Michaela Wooldridge is going to be remembered in Santa Rosa specifically, or in nearby Roseland, I should say, because her name is actually on a homeless encampment that they built there. The original one that I don't think is still standing was behind a Dollar General. And they built this nice place for the homeless people to come stay, or unsheltered people to come stay. And it was called Camp Michaela. And I know it got damaged at one point and they had to rebuild it, but I think that was always intended to be a temporary location. I could not find the final location of Camp Michaela, but they did do that to honor her memory. And also, she has been honored in a walk called A Walk to Remember that they do in Santa Rosa to remember people who died while living on the streets. Because a lot of people who are living on the streets do end up, you know, facing harm. And it's sad because a lot of times they do get forgotten or don't get acknowledged. And it's not fair for them because their lives matter. And so that is something that they do there to remember them. And Michaela was one of those people. And her case has come up several times when other things have happened with unsheltered individuals in that area that it brings up that memory. And so it's kind of discussed again and again. Now, the thing that really stood out to me about this case was that I realized that Michaela was at risk because she was living on the streets at this time, but I really think this crime could have happened to anyone, because we're talking about a situation that's on Halloween night with a guy who's left a Halloween party to go roam the streets on this LSD trip, and he encounters a woman. It could just as easily have been someone walking their dog late at night. I mean, people who are trying to train puppies sometimes do have to go out at 2 a.m., or even big dogs sometimes, to go let their dog use the bathroom. Or it could have been someone coming home from a night shift, or someone going out to get medicine in the middle of the night. There's a lot of reasons why somebody might be out at 2 a.m., including just being on the way home from your own Halloween party and making the safe choice to walk home instead of trying to drive if you've been drinking or doing other things. And it just so happens that he came across a woman who was, you know, living outside at the time, but it could have literally happened to anyone.
That's right.
And I think it's just a chilling reminder that something as safe as going out on Halloween night can literally be a life or death decision. The street that they were on is, like, known for pedestrian walking. Like, there's businesses there. There's sidewalks there. It's not like they're in, like, some kind of alley. Not that that should matter. But it's not like a place that you would look at and automatically think, oh, my God, I need to be scared. And yet, this predator was out there just, like, basically looking for someone to stab to death.
That's crazy.
I know. It's really crazy. It's absolutely frightening. And so, I thought it would be a good case to do for this month, for this Halloween month. And also, too, I did not find this case on any other podcasts, which is one of my criteria. I usually try to make sure that whatever cases we do are either not on other podcasts or, like, really underreported or on a podcast that, like, I don't necessarily think is one that our, you know, listener bases really overlap a lot before I decide to do them on Bad Acts. And so I think that part of it could just be that she wasn't, like, your conventional victim, I guess. It is harder to find pictures of her because of that. I did see some that I'm going to try to use for, like, our social media. But they're not, like, as clean as you might have for people that are, like, posting on Instagram all the time and posting on Facebook all the time and have, like, a lot of pictures that they put out into the public. And I don't know if maybe that's why, but I just thought I needed to tell her story because I feel like Michaela was really on a better path for herself. And I really believe that she was going to make it. She had made a lot of friends at the shelter and they were talking about how she was like a beam of love. And I really do believe that she loved her son a lot and that she wanted to do whatever it took to get healthy so she could be with him. And it's tragic that, you know, mental health problems are a prevalent thing in our society that a lot of people deal with. And it's extremely difficult to get help. It's so hard. And it's hard to find a doctor. It's hard to find therapy groups. It's hard to find the right medications for your condition. And it makes sense sometimes in your mind to, like, use something to help you cope that maybe is not the best choice for you. And I do believe that what her family said about her having these emotional problems that, you know, led to her drug dependency, I do believe that she was just trying to cope with it and it just ended this way and it shouldn't have had to be like that.
Yeah.
And then just to note that she was just a few days away from getting into the shelter, that would have been like her next step for just being better and better.
Yep.
It's just really tragic and it's all because of this douchebag who went to a fucking party and thought it would be super cool to do drugs knowing that he'd had this kind of episode in the past. And then thought it was appropriate to go carry a weapon and roam the streets and look for someone to stab.
Yep.
Essentially. Mm-hmm. And to cover up his crime.
Yep.
And so I'm happy he got caught.
Yep.
So screw that guy. And that is the story of Michaela Wooldridge, who lost her life on Halloween. If you want to listen to more Bad Acts, you don't have to leave. We have a Patreon account. We have a lot of cases over there. We're going to be doing some more Halloween murders this month. I have found at least one other one that I know the Patreon case has not on any other platforms that I have seen so far. And I think that you will also kind of connect with those people that are in that case. It's kind of a wild one. And also, too, we have a lot of other bonus episodes. A lot of our mini episodes are like full length. We have several full length bonuses. We have some current events episodes. There's a lot going on over the Patreon. Memberships start at $1. You can find a link in our show notes. We also have a Buy Me a Coffee account. If you would just like to make a donation to the show, you can find that link in the show notes. We would also appreciate it if you left us a review. Please follow us. You can get more Bad Acts. Recommend us to a friend. And we also have a Gmail account if you would like to send suggestions, questions, notes, feedback, tips for how to make my hair look less frizzy on camera. Like all of these things at badaxpod@gmail.com. You can also follow us on social media. We are most active on Instagram. I'm happy to report that I currently have control back of our Facebook account.
Yay!
It is unhacked. I don't know if I'm going to post there for a bit because I'm feeling a little post-shy. I would like to maybe make myself a second admin with my new Facebook account. I don't know what's going to happen with that, but I definitely am happy that it's not currently in the hackers' hands, so there's that.
Absolutely.
Points. Mm-hmm. And then, Aaron, would you like to tell them about our website?
Yeah, badaxpod.com is our website. It's awesome. It has a picture of a really cool Halloween tree. It's very spooky, very appropriate for the season. Go and check it out. We think you guys will really like it.
100%. And then I also would like to add that we originally planned to have a blog on the website, and I just have never gotten around to it. And we are approaching our 1 year pod.
Yay!
Our 1 year podcast anniversary. I'm not sure what you call it. Podcast anniversary. And so we're trying some new stuff. We're trying to do the YouTube thing. Hopefully that's going to work. And we are also going to be putting some stuff on the blog. And it has occurred to me, I write out like basically an article for every single one of these shows. And then usually when we're just doing the audio version, I kind of read part of it and we'll talk about it and we'll read and talk like as thoughts come to us. I did extemporaneous speaking in high school. So like I partly will just work from like a sentence and then just try to remember what I wrote because that's like how my brain works now from just doing speaking events. I won awards at it, so I'm pretty good. I mean, maybe you don't agree right now, but in the past, I was really good. And so I was thinking maybe I'll put those articles up because they're not exactly what's on the podcast. Some of them have a little more details of like the actual case, but less like discussion. They're more like facts and like kind of story form of it. So we might try that. Let us know what you think, right? All right. Well, we will see you very soon. We can actually see some of you now, or at least you can see us. Thank you for listening. Bye-bye.
Bye.